Okay, and here we are back. As you know, if you were with us last night, we had the uncle of one of the victims at the shooting. William was there. They call him Billy King, and his wife, Kim. He was shot, and I have color photographs here that were taken from his fundraising site, which show the bullet hole in his chest. No question about him being a victim. None. So, once again, no crisis actors. Yoichi Shimatsu is standing by in Beijing right now to join us this hour to share his views. I just received a new short paper from him on Las Vegas, an update. We've been going back and forth, comparing notes and brainstorming this for days now. How are you? How is thing? How are life?
Well, it's okay. It's cooling down here, but I'm out here to help a small independent online media group called April Media set up some forums here for Donald Trump's upcoming visit to Asia, you know, and to China. It'll be a huge event over here.
Oh yeah.
So we thought we'd try to get, you know, a few American journalists and others here to, you know, talk about that before he comes, about the issues and how they expect the press coverage going, so on and so forth. So it's kind of an interesting project, you know, because trade, you know, the trade border tariffs on Chinese goods, the so-called currency, maneuvering and all this stuff, is sort of the biggest problem for the United States for Donald Trump's Make America Great Again, you know, to reindustrialize the United States, give U.S. industry a chance to bounce back. That's actually the top issue, but unfortunately, we're still, of course, caught in the quagmire of all these wars that have raged, you know, in the Middle East and the Muslim world since 9/11, and actually before that, since the Clinton administration, you know, shootout against, you know, in Africa and in Afghanistan, we fired cruise missiles in Afghanistan. So this thing has been going on so long, and you know, it's now a grudge match. Obviously, you know, there's millions of dead. You know,
that's right.
Because of these wars,
that's right.
You know, related to 9/11 events before then, and we're talking about the Arab world being a, you know, since ancient times, as far as anyone can remember, a vendetta society. You kill my brother, I kill your brother. You know, it's an eye for an eye. And
that's largely Islam.
That
yes.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. There's no Christian forgiveness, none of that stuff in that religion. It's very like Old Testament type. You know, you do me, I do you, and this goes on for decades, eternities.
Right.
And these the terror groups, you know, that let's see, these cells or whatever you want to call them, these informal arrangements and formal arrangements, and they're obviously getting funding and planning help and all that from professional militaries. Okay.
That, you bet.
Including possible people inside the U.S. military too, who fought in these wars, been in the Middle East, maybe saw the injustice, maybe converted to Islam. Now, I mean, you know, this is a complicated historical situation we're left with. And unfortunately for Donald Trump, the new president, he's inherited, you know, these basically nearly unsolvable problems, you know, that are just exploding now.
Yoshi, I wonder what he's thinking or what his generals are thinking. A story I have up today is very simple. Steve Lenman wrote it. He says, the Trump administration has intensified the U.S. bombing campaign in Afghanistan and is changing the rules of engagement there, indicating a plan for permanent occupation of the country.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure Lenman is that right, because, you know, Trump very much is a student of Richard Nixon and Kissinger, for that matter, and how Nixon extricated the U.S. out of Vietnam. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't nice. It was very bloody. They started to bomb Hanoi to begin with the visa. So the escalation that Nixon and Kissinger did was actually preliminary to cutting a deal with Vietnam, Russia, and China to get the U.S. out of there. And, you know, it was a very rough deal. The U.S. last helicopter, if you remember from the embassy,
you got it.
was a total mess. So getting into the wars is, you know, in a certain sense, easy enough. Getting out of them is sheer hell, and the bloodshed continues mindlessly. And, from Vietnam. But, you know, Vietnam, you know, the Asians are tend to be, you know, Vietnam is generally a Buddhist and Roman Catholic country. So, and both sides, you know, believe in forgiveness. You know, they're not part
right.
of this
right.
Judeo-Islamic tradition of vengeance, you know, avenge, you know, what you did to me a thousandfold.
Yeah, times
you know,
a thousand.
You're an infidel.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. You're an infidel. You started an everlasting, eternal combat with us, and we'll never forgive you until you're dead. We'll never forgive you. In fact, you're going to hell. And, you know, we'll never forget. We'll never forgive. And this we're seeing playing out in Orlando Pulse, and now at the Route 91 Festival. Just, you know, merciless killing. But I will say one thing, okay, as we pursue this investigation, that they could have killed thousands more. You know, they were shooting at the Bellagio, you know, further north, two, we're talking long blocks on the strip, very long blocks
yep.
away at the Bellagio, probably the Aria that had been hushed up, the Caesar's Palace that had been hushed up. Those gunmen could possibly have killed a lot more.
Think about people, what you're saying again, and let me add to it. The Aria, the Bellagio,
yeah.
Caesars, I've got a story up on
yeah.
that. A guy heard at least 20 rounds
yeah,
in Caesars.
There's a
New York
was part of the Tropicana.
That's right, part of the
Tropicana
yeah.
and the Mandalay Triangle.
That's right.
Yes, there, the triangular
yep.
fire. Yeah, so that's one set. But the second set were just like shots to scare people, okay? In other words, this is very deliberate. You have one triangle death at the south end of the strip, and further up northward on the strip, you have these warning shots. In other words, the warning shots I take actually more seriously. They're saying we could have massacred thousands.
Anytime. Yep.
We could have planted bombs here. There could have been IEDs along the strip. We could have destroyed Las Vegas. We could have massacred all of you, hunted you down in the goddamn streets, right? This is a message coming across. So this is a warning. What is it a warning about? What is this warning all about? And that's up to Trump and his national security team to figure out what are these guys after. What are their demands? You know, what is going on here that, you know, that they've got to do this? And after Orlando was severe enough. And then they're promising to hit San Francisco, which, you know, San Francisco, this that's the ultimate gun control, politically correct sanctuary city.
Continue
to pour in, you know, sleeper cells, and they'll get free housing. They'll get welfare. They'll get driver's licenses in San Francisco. So the assault on the Bay Area could be spectacular. We could see tens of thousands of people, you know, blown up and gunned down. They're promising to hit the Golden Gate Bridge, and I'm sure they're not going to do that with a drive-by, you know, with a car attack or with guns. They're going to blow the thing up, okay? So we got a really enormous problem here, and we don't know, and I'm sure that some of the people in the Trump team have received what these guys want, you know, what their demands are, the list of demands, which are probably unacceptable, you know, or just too, you know, the cost would be, you know.
Right.
Probably in the eyes of, you know, the Pentagon and the energy industry, the investment.
You know, I want to go back and underscore what you said. The other shootings in Las Vegas, there were no reports of casualties, either from eyewitnesses or any other outlets. The media
yeah.
wasn't talking about it. So these were scare things. These were threats. You're right.
This was the second. Yeah, the second cluster. The
blowing out the windows, the doorways.
New York,
yeah,
they did kill people. People were killed. Yeah, yeah. So we're talking. You're talking about the second cluster.
The Bellagio, the Aria, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
If they and we didn't
yeah,
even
Caesars,
get a picture.
Yeah,
Caesars.
Yeah.
We didn't even get a picture of the front of the Bellagio. Now, we know damn well that the guests had to be taking cell phone, smartphone pictures of it. We didn't get any. So they were all apparently searched. They got their phones taken and scrubbed. No pictures of the
yeah.
Bellagio, except we have an eyewitness who saw the windows shot out. So there you go.
Yeah. Well, what happened at the Paris, which is right across the strip from Bellagio, there was someone shot down. There was a wounded person, a gunshot wound, police reported. Called GSW, gunshot wound, inside the Paris. That's the one with that little Eiffel Tower. You know?
Well, I heard that in the police dispatch tapes.
Yeah. So, you know, there was all sorts of gunfire, and at least we know one person was shot. the rest may have been covered up if a few people, because, you know, these guys are just fired.
Could have multiple fatalities, you know? Yoshi. There could be multiple fatalities we don't know about.
Yeah.
I do
yeah.
remember, though, and you listened to the tape as well, the digital recording of the police. The one officer in the venue, he said, he said, I have confirmed ground-level shooter at such and such spot. I forget where he said it, but he's got it. And these people don't, I think I have. No, he had. And a lot of these people were shot at ground level or damn near at ground level.
Yeah, especially on the Tropicana side. By the Tropicana, by the Hooters, to the Hooters building, a separate building back there. And then this number, you know, Gate 14. People said there was a gunman in front of Gate 14. That's the Las Vegas airport, okay? He was positioned, and that's right in the sort of the middle of the concert zone. You know, Gate 14 looks directly toward the Luxor and toward the Mandalay. So there was a gunman on the ground there opening fire, okay, that killed people. You know, people saw girls dropping to the ground. So, you know, this was, let's say, in terms of a paramilitary assault, as happens, let's say, in Iraq or Syria, this was a small-scale event, okay, dead, okay? That's an acceptable toll there in Iraq. Can you imagine that? Where, I mean, the war is coming.
Oh, hell, basically. They have car bombs every weekend that kill 50 to 100 people.
Dead. Yeah, exactly, thousands wounded, that sort of thing. So, but it's more intensified, it's much larger scale than the 3 or 4 man job at Orlando Pulse. This is a much larger operation. Two different zones affecting, like, perhaps up to a dozen buildings if we count Alibaba restaurant. There's another, I think there was another restaurant, Gilly's, Hooters. So we're talking about, you know, up to a dozen buildings and outdoor space under assault, okay? So, and people scared. People herded into the casinos, and that report you just posted from that young fellow called Gio talked about the Tropicana.
Yeah.
You know, the hotel security, I think the guy who came out, the Armenian-looking guy with a briefcase with a gun in it, was probably hotel security. They were trying to herd people into the hotel, but unfortunately, Gio assumed he was a hitman because they were shooting inside the Tropicana that year at the same time. So as they were trying to move people from the concert into the Tropicana, gunfire erupted, okay? So
I don't understand that man at all, because he got down on one knee and he reached down to open his suitcase. At that moment, there was gunfire.
Yeah.
What was he doing if he's security? Why would he?
He gun, obviously. He heard some gunfire. He probably got in his ear, right? He's got an earpiece in his ear. He's probably hotel security that there's a gunman, you know, there's a guy waving a gun inside the Tropicana at the people who are pouring in from the concert hall. So he has to take out his gun to basically, you know, do sort of perimeter check to make sure more gunmen aren't pouring in. Because Tropicana, you got to understand, that's where the outdoor gun guys were. They were outside shooting people down, okay, close range, small arms, you know. So this is, you know, this is a very well-designed attack. Most of the perpetrators got away. Apparently, two dead, you know, at least two dead, maybe seven dead in the total police report. One captured, but wounded. The guy who got to the Excalibur was apparently wounded. He left New York, drove across to the Excalibur, okay? And then he was bleeding, got out, and he's the guy with the wound there, the gunshot wound inside the Excalibur. Another person, gunshot wound inside the Paris. We don't know if that's a gunman or just a, you know, stray shot took out one of the customers.
So you think we have a live gunman in custody?
Yeah, but whether he's still, you know, able to speak, whether he's not, like, mortally wounded or not, you know, because Las Vegas, you got to understand, Las Vegas is a heavily armed town. The very design of Las Vegas, of course, along that strip, the ocean of the strip, is in case, because the casinos get robbed, right? There's armed robberies, there's gangs.
Yeah.
Ocean's 11, you know, one of the most famous films ever. Frank Sinatra, right? Ocean's 11.
Yeah.
And what's his name?
George Clooney. Yeah.
And Brad Pitt. That is legendary stuff, you know. By the way, my stepfather's brother was the actual Danny Ocean, okay? He was the actual guy who was banned from Vegas for having
no kidding.
A photo memory. Yeah, I'm related to the guy. Nice guy. We used to call him Uncle Sam. Nice guy. Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah,
it's funny.
Yeah, it is funny. I have all these strange coincidences in my life.
You do.
But, yeah, strange background. Just like, you know, it's like the pachinko, or what do you call it? Like, the, you know, when you're playing pinball, the ball's going crazy all over the place.
Yeah.
Getting every pin. Yeah. Sort of like one of those kind of lives. So anyway, other stuff that we've discussed turned up.
Yeah, did
okay,
you?
There's two very strange things that occurred. Okay, we should briefly mention.
Yeah.
That in August, the Saudi Air Force had a massive team there
doing maneuvers
with the U.S. Air Force. Mm-hmm. Stayed at the W Hotel. Okay, but during that exercise, no Arabian royalty. Saudi Arabian royalty stayed at the Saudi-owned Four Seasons Hotel, which occupies the top five floors of the Mandalay building.
No, okay. Nobody knows that has not been talked about during the shooting.
Talked about the obvious. I mean,
yeah,
where
yeah.
could the gunmen have gone? There's hundreds of rooms inside the inside a hotel on the upper floor.
They could have gone straight up and put on a waiter's uniform and just hung out.
Exactly. Exactly. No way to uncover those guys. They all disappeared. The rest of the teams, where the heck did they go? And we have the Saudi owned, Dubai owns the MGM group. The CEO was recently kicked out September 27th. That explains a lot of the financial volatility. But basically, Dubai apparently has now essentially a controlling interest. And that's the MGM, which is the Mandalay, the New York, where shooting occurred. Okay?
Yeah, and so, the Luxor.
So, in the Luxor, yeah. And there was apparently a car device they thought was a bomb found in the parking garage above the Luxor. But apparently it was a dummy. For some reason, the attack team wanted to keep the Mandalay team and the team that hit the Tropicana, New York, and the rest of the places separate. Mandalay was a separate operation, somehow involving this burning Stephen Paddock. You know, Stephen Paddock was trying to sell the Fast and Furious guns to the Arabs. So they wanted to contain that whole incident, control that incident, and around the Mandalay. They didn't want the two sets of gunmen to get mixed up with each other, okay?
So very astute observation. Very astute.
Yeah, that's why the so-called bomb scare in the Luxor. Someone called in the bomb, okay? And the Luxor is all glass. One bomb and the whole thing goes down, right? It shatters. It's over. So obviously, if they really wanted to do the damage, they wouldn't have called in a bomb. They would have used a bomb in the car and knocked out the entire Luxor. You know, that would have been a tremendous black eye.
Yeah. Correct.
Luxor, of course, Egyptian theme. Okay?
Yeah.
So maybe maybe these people from that part of the world said, well, we shouldn't blow up the Luxor. It's got the Sphinx. It's Egypt. It's one of our little trinkets out there, you know? We want to keep it intact. But it was used definitely as a divider, as a vacuum between the two attack teams. Okay? The other problem, the airport, Gate 14, the infamous Gate 14, which directly looks across the concert field to the Mandalay, direct line of sight, and there was a gunman there somewhere on the airport perimeter firing at people, at least one or two gunmen there. Problem of the airport and the Tropicana is that Tropicana Road goes to the airport, to Las Vegas McCarran International Airport.
Yeah.
And an entire team, right, of military, basically military special operations group flew out of McCarran after the incident, right? Later that night in the early hours. Did they fly in to back up the police? Were they involved, okay, in hunting down gunmen and assisting the police? Because the FBI didn't have enough people there. The FBI set this whole thing up. They got sucked in. You know, they created a trap. They were trapped in their own trap. They didn't have sufficient manpower. The police had to do stuff. But apparently, you know, there were a lot of guys there in, you know, heavy flak jackets with Tommy guns. You know, they were there. They had submachine guns with them.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Uh huh.
So the question is, were those Air Force Special Operations people somehow supporting the Saudi attack on Las Vegas, or were they there called in at the last minute? This is one of the mysteries to stop that. They knew, because you see, the Saudis. They had maneuvers with them out at the Tonopah, you know, bombing range.
At Tonopah.
And they know where these guys know the Saudis. The Saudis were there for a month at the W Hotel on the Strip.
Mm-hmm.
Room rates there, $1,400 a night, okay? At the W. And they stayed there for a month. Cost millions of dollars for the Saudi Air Force to be there. One of the Air Force guys got busted by the Vice Squad for raping a boy, an American boy, okay, during that trip. All right?
Wow.
So the Air Force guys know these guys. And let's face it, yeah, this kind of operation, you got to get weapons aboard planes. The Saudi Air Force planes were flying into and over Vegas, I think it's Scranton, Pennsylvania, other places, that month, okay?
Hmm.
How do you bring in a bunch of weapons for these guys, machine guns and all that? Bring them in on military planes.
Oh,
right?
it's too easy.
Leave them at the W Hotel?
It's too easy. You know how many trucks pull up to those hotels every day with tens and tens of thousands of pounds of supplies every day?
Every night, every morning. Yeah.
It's tractor trailers nonstop.
Yeah. So there was a sighting behind the Bellagio of three armored vehicles. I assume, you know, they were brought in by the military, right? And the guy with a gun there, which would have been a military officer in plainclothes uniform with a rifle. Okay.
Right.
So the lot of white guys were seen with rifles, but they were either off duty cops who came in or part of the secret Air Force team. All right. So their exact role and all that. This was a military style attack. There was a military.
What was that? Yeah, military style ambush is what it was.
Oh, yeah. The feds set a trap. The cheese with the Fast and Furious guns. These guys trapped the trappers. Okay. So, and they just blew this guy, Stephen Paddock, just blew him away. You know, gunshot to the back of the head, like I said, you know.
Did you hear, I don't know if I sent it to you or not. We're going to go through this break, Todd. Did you hear Eric Paddock's interview where he slipped?
I can't pick up YouTube over here because it's all blocked. All that kind of media is blocked. So I'm at a disadvantage. I have to read
I'm going to play it for you.
Good.
I'm going to play it for you. He has done two rather lengthy interviews with various news groups. And the first one, if you all remember, if you saw it, he was kind of kept going up toward his head and pulling at his hair, sort of like, I can't understand it, I can't understand it, I can't understand it, I can't understand it. All right, he knew. All right, so the second one, which I have a copy of, he was all shook up. He was babbling and just running off at the mouth. And this was back on October the 9th, I think it was. Yeah.
This is the brother of Stephen Paddock.
That's right.
Yeah, he lives down in Orlando. Guess where the last attack occurred? Orlando.
Exactly. So this is, he can't understand it.
It happened in his backyard. He should be able to understand it.
He kept saying that he didn't have any idea why his brother would do this. And then, as if he had been talked to before he went out to talk to the press at some point, he was clearly afraid. He was faking crying. It was quite a virtuoso performance. But then he put his foot in it. And he said, his brother was, and when you hear this, you're going to be amazed. He said, Stephen was He said AR and stopped. Arms. He was going to say arms dealer.
Arms dealer.
That's what he was going to say. And he stopped. Yeah. And then he says, pause. And you hear him say, I'm sorry. Like he's wired and he's apologizing to his controllers.
Sure.
I'm sorry.
He's wired.
I'm sorry. Yeah. And then he said, please to the media. Like, please don't play this.
Yes.
And I'm going to play it for you.
We know the company that Stephen worked for, Beaumont, based in Chantilly, Virginia. They're arms dealers, okay? Okay, so, they're all former CIA officers.
That's where the money came from.
Defense intelligence.
That's right.
Defense intelligence. And they work for Eric Holder's Fast and Furious. And that's why he had the two planes, to deliver guns to guys who were selling to the Mexican mafia. Yeah. So, clear, Eric wanted to tell the truth, because that would exonerate his brother, right?
It That's a Freudian slip.
Mission. He's on a government mission, my God, yeah. He
that's
wasn't
right.
this madman. Yeah. So that's
right.
why he was torn. He wanted
right.
to his father was their father was disgraced as a bank robber.
Yeah.
Now the brother does not want his older brother, Stephen, this is the oldest brother, to go down that same path as an enemy of America. Stephen was working for the government, federal government. His sole employment was with the federal government. He was trying to redeem the family's name. So for them, this was a terrible disgrace that this older brother who tried to fix what the father had done, okay, to society, now goes down and, takes the blame. The family is smeared again. So you can see why he's so emotional. You know, this is a crisis for this family.
That's
this
right.
particular family.
He was so yeah. shook up.
He
let the cat out of the bag. I'll play it for you in just a
yeah.
moment, and you'll
yeah.
hear it. Want to say one other thing. As we've discussed, all those weapons in the room, there were yeah. many different kinds and configurations. I suspect that was a retail display. He was going to meet some people
yeah.
there for business. Those weapons were brought up
yeah.
through the service elevator
yeah.
for
yeah.
show and sales. And he walked yeah. into the room either with or without his business appointment. And they immediately
yeah.
executed him and laid him out and blew out the windows, knocked him out, and then left.
Well, from the timeline suggesting he was shot like a minute before 10 suggests that the shooting was actually by this multi-member team, this whole huge squad, was supposed to begin at 10 p.m., okay?
Right, right.
But it was delayed by the fact that they said, oh, you joined ISIS? Yeah, you're one of us? Okay, let's take your guns, bust the window, and start shooting the people. And that's when he probably froze, tried to find an excuse. I got to go to the toilet. Goes to the toilet, heads to the toilet to call his FBI handlers. And he shot in the back of the head. Okay.
That's a very interesting.
So, and that delayed
huh.
the timing to somewhere between 10:06 and 10:08 when the shooting started. Coordinated shooting started. In other
right.
words, for more than 5 minutes, the guy said, "No, shoot. Now what? You know, I thought the guy was going to, was here to open fire on the crowd for us. You know, and show us how good his gun was. And now." We had to shoot him, you know, a minute before the operation. No one starts an operation at 10:06. 10:15, yeah. Right? 10:30, yeah.
You got
10:20,
it.
10:20, okay. You see what I'm saying? Well, who starts firing? It's because they expected if he says he's a Muslim, even if he's an agent, okay, even if he is an agent, FBI, he would have started firing on the crowd. You know, to convince these guys, I'm with you, you know, to go through with the operation. He had moral qualms, again, I believe, because of the father. The father being a bank. You know, there's a huge guilt on that family. And they just couldn't do what, let's say, a real, agent does. The agent doesn't,
right.
fire on his mother
right.
or grandmother.
And
yeah,
then his executioners, the other team, left the room. And encountered Mr. Campos, the security guard who had come upstairs
exactly.
to check on the door
yes.
of the adjoining
yeah.
suite because there was a light
yeah.
showing the door was ajar. And
yeah.
they
yeah.
saw him and
yeah.
they shot him in the leg. They probably fired off.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
they made their escape.
Yes.
They,
yes.
Had, to, they
exactly.
had to take him down. They probably thought he was dead, but they freaked out.
Too, yeah. probably,
shot him.
I bet he played dead. I bet he played dead. He had to.
Yeah.
He was outgunned. Yeah. They had automatic yeah. weapons. He was unarmed.
Now, just for the record, for our
yeah.
listeners, you mentioned Chantilly. Tell us a little bit more
yeah.
about that connection.
Yeah, well, Stephen Paddock, from 2006 until 2014, kept one of his planes. It was called a Cirrus SR-20 at Chantilly Airport. Chantilly is in Virginia. It's not far from D.C., and Chantilly is basically the airport for Quantico. Am I pronouncing it right? Quantico, the FBI.
Correct.
There's a TV show called Quantico. It's the FBI's academy, all right? Now, what's curious, he moved his plane in 2014, early 2014, to Roanoke Airport, which is only 22 miles away. You know, the plane was registered as belonging to him in Chantilly. But then when it went to Roanoke, it was put under the name of Volant, which is this defense contractor. They have a web page, you know, mm-hmm. Volant, V-O-L-A-N-T, which all of its associates have top-level security clearance, not just for operations, but to look to retrieve compartmentalized files. So they're all top-level people, and Stephen was one of the highest-ranking members of Volant, okay? So he was a government, he was working as a contractor, a very well-paid contractor. That's where he got all his money for Volant. Now, what's curious, toward the end of 2013, an ATF, alcohol, tobacco, firearms agent, at a time right after Fast and Furious was shut down and Congress was investigating, and there was an IG, Inspector General, inspection
right.
of, you know, what was a, because a bunch of ATF and Drug Enforcement, DEA officers were killed on the border with guns that went to the Mexican Mafia, supplied
right.
by the FBI. But
right.
these were under Attorney General, you know, Eric Holder. These were from the ATF vaults. You know, the ATF seizes weapons, right? They're basically customs bureau.
Giant armory.
So they have an arsenal of seized weapons that are unmarked, you know, foreign weapons and all that. So what happened is Paul Parisi was a 25-year veteran of ATF specializing in explosives and arson. In other words, he is a chemical forensic analysis. He takes evidence from a site, takes it to Quantico, which has a top forensic lab in the country, in the world, actually, yeah, and analyze stuff. And at the time, the Inspector General's office was trying to get all kinds of DNA and chemical evidence on whatever guns they could retrieve, right? They take these guns, wrap them in plastic, send them to Quantico, and he'd be analyzing them using all sorts of, you know, cross-spectrum, you know, wide-spectrum types of detection equipment, all kinds of, you know, artificial noses
sure.
and all this to pick up every trace. So in other words, he would be able to pick up which ATF agent, maybe even which offices from the dirt, you know, from the dirt samples,
wow.
which ATF officer, FBI officers did this gun pass through, all right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That was especially the ones used in the crime to kill the DE agents on the border, okay? Well, it turns out in 2013, Parisi, resident of Chantilly, Virginia, was murdered in his house with his wife, both shot while the girls were watching, while the daughters were watching TV. Someone had slipped in quietly, unnoticed, and you have to remember, Stephen Paddock worked as a mailman for 2 years, federal government. He was a letter carrier. Okay, the one guy who can get in your house quietly is
yeah.
the postman, right?
Oh, yeah.
Not softly, doesn't ring the doorbell. You know, you look out, oh, it's the postman, we got something, waving something, right?
Right.
Comes and plugs the ATF chief forensic officer there, plugs the wife, they're screaming, the wife is screaming, oh my God, he plugs her. And by the time the girls run downstairs, gone, okay? There's a gun in Paul Parisi's hand, okay? That fired gun in his hand.
Right.
This suggests, and this was a move, Pat explained, suggests that he was not only an arms dealer, he was an assassin for the agency and for high level people. And it's not for the CIA, but for the people who control the CIA. You know, there's higher level guys, you know, people like the Rockefellers, the Clintons, and all that. They don't have to belong. You know, they run the thing, they own the thing. Okay. So
who was the
yeah?
assassin?
Paddock.
You think Stephen Paddock?
The plane was in his name, parked at Chantilly.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Yeah.
The plane had been used to move guns, okay? The plane would have all the chemical traces. They had to move that plane, okay?
Totally dirty.
It has to be, he, you know, to save his bosses at Volant and their clients, their high, like Eric Holder, to save them from this congressional probe, okay? Which would have definitely shown some really dirty dealings with these guns. I mean, they maybe not went the route that they were supposed to go, maybe went directly to Mexican government officials, things like this, okay? You have no idea. So maybe Mexican bankers, security, and all that. We don't know what really happened because the man who was in forensics was wiped out. He was killed. The man in the know was killed, okay, in his home.
That was one of the most important people in the country, really. Think about it.
At the time, yeah, in the world.
His skills?
Yeah, this is one of the... Yeah.
Yeah,
the whole point is Las Vegas came out of Fast and Furious. It was a sting operation to sell guns based on Fast and Furious. Fast and Furious failed, so these guys said, well, let's try and try again on a different bunch of stupid guys. And
all
once
right.
again, they were outsmarted. The Mexicans outsmarted them, and the Arabs outsmarted them.
Okay.
What a disaster.
What a total disaster. I'm going to play this now. You're going to hear Eric Paddock say, basically, my brother was an arms dealer. He got the half the word of arms out, a four-letter word, A-R, and then he stopped, and he said, I'm sorry. And when you hear him say, I'm sorry, he is scared. Oh, my. Here we go.
Also disappointed. Again, disappointed, not just scared.
Yep.
He wants the truth out.
Good point. Here we go.
I mean, there's him getting on a plane and flying somewhere is like you going to Publix. I mean, it's something he just does every week.
You use the phrase evil genius. Do you think that he was?
I'm sorry. I mean, that's the thing I shouldn't have said. But that's what people are, I mean, that he's this, you know. But he's a highly intelligent, there's absolutely no, and this is the other part that I want to stress with this, that it doesn't matter that they won't chase people, but people are saying, oh, he must have had help. Steve had no help.
Here it comes.
Steve didn't take help. It did not take a village for Steve. Steve was an I'm sorry. Please don't. I was about to use a colloquial term that would besmudge one of the armed forces. Steve was a...
Got it?
Oh, that would smudge one of the armed forces?
Yes.
One of the Defense Intelligence Agent. He said, Steve was very intelligent, as in intelligent, working for the armed forces. He flew every week, okay?
That's right.
He flew every week.
That's right.
Every
always working on jobs. Oh, that's right. Here it is one more time. You got to hear this.
Had help. Steve had no help. Steve didn't take help. It did not take a village for Steve. Steve was an I'm sorry. Please don't. I'm using a colloquial... I was about to use a colloquial term that would besmudge one of the armed forces. Steve was...
And end of story.
Well, it's right there. It's right there. It was so obvious to the brother. He was proud of his brother. His brother was a loner, and that was probably his downfall, too. Okay, he couldn't trust anyone else, right? That's why he's doing it all on his own. He can trust himself. He's a very methodical guy, good at math, well-educated, very calm, you know?
Right. In
all this stuff, very rational, just the opposite of his father. You know, he has his father's brilliance, but he was trying to be the good guy, use it for the good, to help the country, instead of being a lowly criminal bank robber, shared some of his father's fault. His father was a gambler, was a womanizer, so was Steve, but in terms of society, okay, he wanted to do something to defend the country rather than rip it off, like his father did, you know, The Valley Bank in Tucson was robbed twice by his father, the bank. And then he was a con man, fraudster, vehicles that were really junk. You know, I guess they were stolen vehicles and so on.
He was a low life hustler.
Abandoned the wife, right? Set up and escaped from prison. Broke out of prison. He served a year and then broke out. Fled to Oregon under a different name. Set up a bingo parlor, of all things, you know, to defraud people. the guy was bad news, okay?
Yeah.
That father was a disgrace. And you see Hope Paddock's career. From the time he was, you know, his first job was with the post office, then with the Internal Revenue Service, and then with an aircraft maintenance company that had ties with the U.S. government, possibly in Mena, Arkansas, during the Clinton administration, because he has an Arkansas connection. In other words, the federal government wanted to prevent the sons from going the way of the father. The father was a psychopath. He was a diagnosed psychopath, a madman, okay? The government said these boys are going to turn out really bad, enemies of society, unless we take them under our wing. So I think all three sons, or four sons, were carefully groomed by the parole office, you know, well, essentially parole office, federal officers connected with parole, to make sure these boys would not go astray like the dad and become a real problem and a real, you know, I mean, a super problem because the dad was very smart. So Stephen took that up and wanted to be the good guy. So he's not a rogue killer. See, at the last minute, he balked. the guys who, his clients, his ISIS brethren or whatever, because he joined ISIS when he was over in Jordan and the UAE, okay? He had to do that as part of his undercover operation. This is after his ISIS was going down.
Got it.
They were desperate.
Mm-hmm.
They sent him in there. The Defense Intelligence sent him in there. A lot of aid workers, American guys, were beheaded already. He risked his life to meet with the Brotherhood. In other words, he put everything on the line, and his brother's voice shows a pride in Stephen, right? He's in awe. It's a hero to him. You know, he risked his life for his country to redeem, again, to redeem that family as you know, working for the American people rather than against it. And so, but that led to his downfall. He couldn't trust anyone else, wanted to do the deal alone. And at the last minute, he balked. You know, like any other federal agent, if they said shoot at those people, you would do it. I've written about this. You know, it's like joining a gang. They're going to tell you shoot somebody who's close to you, somebody you knew, a friend, or an undercover cop that was your drinking buddy. They're going to say, go shoot that guy. And you've got to do it if you're going to penetrate an organized crime or terrorist operation.
That's a test.
But
that's
the
ticket.
He saw those people down there. He couldn't do it. He couldn't pull the trigger. And as an agent, he should have. I mean, I just say it. It's a spot call. Kill a fellow. But he just, you know, like you could see this tension in him, right? You know, my father, you know, right? I'm going to end up as a worse criminal than my father if I do this, right? The family's gone forever. That's the end of the Paddock name. Yeah? So that's why his brother Eric in Orlando was so torn apart by this drama. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So this is, there's a moral, you know, there's a moral lesson in this tale, okay? This is a morality play, if ever was, about personal ethics, about social responsibility, about
interesting,
political loyalty.
Interesting analysis. Fascinating.
Yeah.
When Eric said that, Stephen was in R, this is no, it was...
arms deal, yeah.
That's it.
Colloquial term. See, that was just a business, okay? It was a job for the government. He was doing his duty for the government, arms deal. But then he says the colloquial term, and I don't want to besmirch the reputation of the armed forces. the Department of Defense, the DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, is involved in heavy arms dealing to gangsters and to terrorists. All right? Terrorism made in America, okay, made at the Pentagon, okay? So all you guys, the 9/11 crowd, all that false flag, you're right about that. You're right about 9/11, okay? You're absolutely right about that. Department of Homeland Security came out of that whole nexus, too. But in this case, the fabric of that alliance with the Arabs and with ISIS had come apart, okay? Yeah, you know, former allies were at each other's throats, and that explains what happened in Vegas. No, they just said, you know, you thought you were going to sell us guns? No, we thought you were going to come here and mow down all your fellow Americans, because this is the second attack we promised. You know, brother, okay? So, wow, what a dilemma. Make a great pen. I mean, this is better than any kind of George Clooney spy movie or Matt Damon, you know? This is
I
would say than the Jason Bourne series. This is the real deal, man. It's more complicated. It's more psychological, more historical. This is the real deal we're looking at, and it's not a fiction. So I just wrote you a piece here criticizing all the guys who are saying this is false flag. I said, come on, guys. Three administrations, 16 years later, after 9/11, you know, when does the real world begin again? All right?
When?
Right?
Right.
Yeah, when does the real world begin again? I mean, people out there at each other's throats, yeah? There's been massive falling out. There's millions dead we left in the Middle East, okay? There's all kinds of gunmen, you know, defense contractors now running around without a job now. You don't expect murder and mayhem now in the aftermath of this thing?
It's going to get worse.
Retreat, always, you know, the rule of thumb in military affairs. Oh, an invasion is the easiest part. It's the retreat when you get killed. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That's when you know, you're trying to pull out of a war. That's the most dangerous time. Okay, and that's happening now. You know, America's in retreat out of the Middle East, which is why Trump is again trying to reinforce the forces in Iraq and Afghanistan, Syria, just to, so that will cover the retreat. Every military strategist know it's open game on Americans everywhere in the world right now. America's pulling out. America failed to win those wars. Every kid, every 12-year-old kid is eager to join the jihad and take out an American before they're all gone.
That's their right. That's absolutely their prime directive.
At the beginning of the war, before the war, right before the war, after 9/11, and the boys there were saying, we are so depressed. This is right before 9/11. Our uncles got to fight the Soviet Union, and now there's no war. The AK-47 price is down to $15 a piece. No one's fighting, and so we're the lost generation. Our uncles were heroes. We are nobodies. Then when 9/11, after that, America said George Bush ordered an attack on Afghanistan, they were cheering. These boys were just thrilled. They were so happy to be able to die in battle. That's the kind of world it is out there, okay? And they're not afraid of an invasion. They want an invasion. They want you to come to their front door. And you see, they're coming to your front door at the hotel.
Yoshi, the most important thing of this hour is that this was clearly a compartmentalized, probably three, maybe four segments of an operation.
Yeah.
And the others were designed not to kill people, or they would have killed a lot of people. They were designed to inflict fear, to show the whole town, which is connected to the government, connected to the globalists, connected to the Saudis, connected to Dubai.
The
banksters, it's all about the banksters, to show them that they could bring this whole thing down unless they played ball with them.
Exactly. It's a high-end political play, which means we're saying that there were state participants, not just state-sponsored terrorists, state participants, military forces, okay, special operations forces from the Arab world were there, trainers, planners. We know a massive Saudi Air Force and Air Special Operations Group was in Vegas in August. They had every time to plan this operation. We know they stayed at the W Hotel on the Strip, okay, where they can case out everything, okay? They can bring in weapons. They can recruit any kind of local talent they need to sacrifice there and throw away.
Any. 10,000 Muslims in Las Vegas live there.
Yeah, and the other thing is, these Arab guys, okay, they like white women with big breasts, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
The shooting at Hooters, shooting at Gillies. Gillies is a cowboy saloon and barbecue place where the girls sort of wear, they wear chaps and they wear these little tops on them, leather tops and all that.
Right.
They're very beautiful blondie-type women. So the places they choose to shoot were places they had an excuse. Oh, I have to case the place out. I got to go down there, tomorrow night again.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
I do.
You can read the fingerprints. All these Arab guys, they love the Hooters. And some maybe some Arab oil tycoon says, "What are you boys doing here, military guys?" We're in operations research. Okay.
Right.
You see, that's how it works. That's what happened.
Yeah.
So all the planning occurred in August. Okay, and what the role of the Four Seasons Hotel top. Five floors, seven floors above Stephen Paddock's room, okay? Same hotel.
Yeah.
Separate elevator system, okay? They shut down the elevator system for the Mandalay, but the Four Seasons elevator system kept going. No one does that. That's VIP, That's $5,000
a night.
Well,
they could have taken the shooters up, put them back in their busboy or waiter uniforms, and they're...
Exactly.
It's just easy. It's too easy.
They all disappeared.
By the way, disappear. Yeah.
The thing is, you got to understand about Vegas, the cops have a routine there to shut. Why is there a strip? Why are there so few roads? Okay, there's only a few boulevards, right?
No, they want to be able to shut that whole thing down anytime they want.
Yeah, anytime a bank robber, a casino robber comes. So in other words, there was no way anyone could escape by car. The airport was under sort of a curfew. There was a lockdown. No escape, but no shooters after that arrested. The whole team of 30 or so just vanished.
That's a good number, too, around 30. By the way,
30 because you have support crew and all that. Yeah.
About 2,500 feet from the concert venue, due south, due south is the airport, and that right there is the Janet Airways facility, the U.S. Air Force, Area 51, top secret security clearances, where all the people that work at Area 51 and S4 park their cars, hop on a 737. They got five of them parked right there. I got aerial pictures of it. They could have had a standby plane there, too, not one of the Janet Airways planes, but another plane. They could have gone right there and been extracted that way, some of them.
Well, I hate to put it this way. This is really sad, but the Saudis own the U.S. Air Force. Okay? They finance the U.S. Air Force. Without Saudi money, there would be, you know, you'd be flying biplanes. Okay? That's the reality. That's a really sad reality about being an indebted country that's no longer great, that's dependent on foreign charity. Okay?
Well, we are a debtor
country. They could have easily flown an Air Force plane out there. Like hundreds of Saudis have been there just 6 weeks before, partying and having the best time.
That's right.
U.S. airmen are stuck in their barracks with no money to go anywhere. So the Saudis aren't going to, you know, waste their money on that.
All right, Yoshi, have a good time in Beijing. Thanks for being on.
I'll keep you, hopefully I'll be here. I'm setting up these forums, but I don't know what security arrangements it would be like when Trump comes, but I can give you a report then.
Very good. Okay? Please do. Yeah, I'll put your article up here in another hour or so. We'll have it.
Now, I'll try to get more of a, once we piece together more information, another analysis of the post-shooting event.
Okay? We'll keep working at it. Thank you. Take care.
Yeah, and you're doing a great job. The posts are excellent, remarkable. It's the best site out there with the least amount of garbage in it. Okay.
Thank you.
Because the other sites are just loaded with nonsense. Okay. So, good stuff. Good work.
Thank you. All right. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
One of the great people on the planet. Just an honor to have him on, always. Okay, we will be back in 21 hours tomorrow night, and hope to have the pleasure of your company then.